become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves.
Well, folks, welcome back to the National Intelligence Report on the 17th day of November in the year of 2023. I know that liberty weeps, but I got to be honest with you. I'm not sure our founding fathers are spinning in their graves unless we're talking about the Federalists, who are spinning in their graves enjoying one hell of a party, because look at what they created. But folks, second hour, we have been blessed with the presence of one excellent lady, probably one of the most astute historians that I have been, it has been my pleasure to meet. So Ms. Karen Quinones of New York, she is the owner-operator of Patriot Tours in New York City. Karen, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. I couldn't resist. I was listening to you guys while reading the famous Alexander Hamilton pamphlet.
Oh,
letter
no.
About John Adams, which we'll be discussing tomorrow. And I just had to join in, you guys. First of all, everybody knows that it wasn't Hamilton who had all that influence over Madison. We New Yorkers all know it was Madison, you know? So I had to tease you a little bit about that first.
Okay.
But I have to tell you guys something, so an idea I have. When I talk to people about the Constitution, right? I think where we are is we're in a similar place where people were, say, in the 1760s, when they knew that what they had was not working for them. But the idea of throwing it out for something else was terrifying, right? So it was like the English called it the world turned upside down, right? That. And I think that's where we are now. Americans are so invested in the United States Constitution and have taught, of course, to respect it and revere it and all of this, that when you do start deconstructing things and showing them inconsistencies or pointing out to them things they also think is wrong, they start to shut down in communicating with you, because the idea of, well, what would happen if we got rid of it or changed it into something else or whatever, is just so terrifying that people can't approach it. So my question is, you know, how do you present this in a way that's approachable to people and that doesn't scare the crap out of them?
Well, Karen, there's two things that hit my mind with that question. That's an excellent question. But two things hit my mind, and one of them is the fact is that we go back, you know, if you want to use scripture, you know, if you want to go back to Second Samuel chapter 8, the mass of the people wanted a king. And I think that is the problem today as we look, you know, you can go and look at so many instances. The mass of the people rule the country, and the mass of people in this country are basically idiots. They want to be entertained. They don't want to be educated. They don't want to be their opinion is all that matters. Their opinion is fact, regardless of how many facts you produce to show that they're wrong. They still believe that their opinion is fact. We can never have, and that is one thing that the Federalists wanted big time at the Constitutional Convention, was a government of the majority. They wanted the majority to always rule because they knew that the majority were idiots. And so they knew that if they could get them to vote in numbers, their policies would always be pushed forward. Go ahead, Karen. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
I agree with you totally about that. And so then, you know, I look back and I say, the people wanted a king then, right? When Thomas Paine wrote Common Sense, he made fun of the king, right? He said, oh, you all want a king, you know, God warned the Israelites about having a king. And he says, you know, this is during the divine right of kings. He says, you know, if God wanted us to have kings, why does he send us asses as lions, right? The symbol of England. Why are the kings asses? And he goes on to say that the king is the most unworthy person to govern us in America because he's the most cloistered person in the world. And he has absolutely no connection to real life. And why do you want this? And I encourage everybody to read Common Sense. There's a lot of great stuff in it. And he talks about this. And I think that when he published it in early 1776, people were receptive to it first because the British had already invaded us and were already killing us. And because we had just reached a point of such crisis that people were receptive to the message. So my worry is that people are not going to be receptive to a message of change until they're in such a crisis state that something horrible happens. You know, I worry about this all the time because, you know, I'm a historian and I look back at trends and I see this all the time, that people don't want to change until there's nothing else left to do. And when you get to that point, you have real instability. I mean, look at France, right? They got the French Revolution, they got the terror, and they got Napoleon. Because you get these powerful leaders out of instability because people want to follow, as you said, a king, or they want to follow an authority figure or a father figure, or I don't know, in America, maybe we want a mother figure now. God help us.
Oh, right? Goodness.
The despotism of the petticoat, as Mr. Adams said. more true now than ever. So, you know, I think about this, that, you know, I try to reach out to people and show them, you know, why the anti-federalists were right in their warnings and how we're seeing all of this play out, and try to get people to understand that, you know, maybe the government as it's structured is not suitable to your freedom. But it's very hard because, like I said, people believe all there is the United States Constitution. And without it, we would have, you know, lawlessness or anarchy. And I don't know, if you're living in New York City right now, we do have lawlessness and anarchy. So I don't know how you can be afraid of that at this point when we're just seeing it every day here.
Oh, big time. And let's bring the other two guys in here. DW, you want to comment, please, sir?
Hey, gentlemen.
Well, Karen, it's our pleasure, our extreme pleasure to have you join us this evening. I'm having a bit of a rub with these words. That's just my nature. I don't see that these anti-federalists were anti-federal. They were. They seem to be pro-Confederists.
They definitely were. Right, the anti-federalist term.
They didn't give themselves that name.
Right, that was a pejorative term.
Gave it to them.
Right.
Right.
That was a pejorative term, the New York guys, yes.
They were misidentified and labeled by propaganda. They grabbed the narrative and they used the media to misassign an identity and a perspective in the minds of people, didn't they? Yeah, that's
right.
Really
and,
interesting.
And here in New York, some of the men here in New York, like Mike knows, one of my favorite men, Isaac Ledyard, you know, embraced the term anti-federalist, and you see them putting stuff out and signing it, a true anti-federalist. You know, it starts out as a pejorative term, but some of the really, you know, outspoken guys in New York actually went on to embrace the term and saying, okay, if that means I'm against you, then I'm against you and I'm an anti-federalist. If you're calling yourself a federalist, and you're defining what it is to be a Federalist, and it's you, Mr. Hamilton and company, then okay, I'm an anti-Federalist, and I'm proud of it.
But unfortunately, Karen, we gave them the opportunity to define the playing field.
That's right.
And that is never good. And let's see if we can waken the camper out there in Arizona. Cal?
Well, I think in all of this narrative that goes around, something seems to be lost. You know, I mean, Trump had his Make America Great Again. That song said, we must take America back. And the purpose of government is to secure the rights of the people, to help secure the rights of the people. And I think that's lost. I mean, they think, well, if we take America back, I'm going to be free and I'm going to have liberty. But that's not the case. I mean, look at the Declaration of the Necessities and Causes for Taking Up Arms, written for the Continental Congress, primarily by Jefferson. And in it, he states that no attachment to no nation upon earth shall supplant our attachment to liberty. Which that follows along with Patrick Henry's Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death. And I think if people would focus on securing their liberty and having their rights secured, maybe things would change. I mean, people get all upset if they say they violated the Constitution. They're not all upset saying, well, my rights have been violated. They violated words on a piece of paper.
Right.
They not even realizing that it's your rights that are being violated. And I think, and if people don't understand what their rights are, if they don't understand what rightful liberty is, and they don't understand where their rights come from, how many people think their rights come from the Constitution? I've heard constitutional conservatives say, well, the Constitution was just written for Americans, and those rights are only applied to Americans. But no, the Creator endowed all mankind with certain unalienable rights. That means everybody in the world. And I think that's kind of lost on most people anymore. And that's by design, of course. But maybe that's an avenue to put a few more brush fires of freedom in people's minds. Is it supposed to be about your liberty and your rights, people? It's not about empire and country.
Well, I think it's interesting when you ask people what they think their rights are, and get them to try to explain to you what their rights are. And a lot of times they can't do it, or they're confusing commercialism with their rights, or they're confusing a whole lot of things with their rights. So I think Americans have lost sight of what it means to have natural rights. Like what is your natural rights? Like, here in New York, of course, it's your right to have housing, and it's your right to have, a minimum income. And of course, none of those things are your rights, right? None of those things are.
So Karen, what I'm hearing you say is that you're familiar with a number of people who have conflated rights and entitlement.
Yes. And that's where we are, that people really don't know. Like if you ask, like when on my tour, my Revolutionary War tour, I do a couple quotes from the Declaration of Independence, not too many, but the one I do use is, governments are instituted deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And I try to explain to people why that was such a radical idea in the day of the divine right of kings, and how today that's become a very radical idea as well. Because like the parliament and the king then, the Congress and the presidency now are not working according to the will of the people, right? But we've lost that knowledge that they only exist with our will. And then, of course, Jefferson says, it's the right of the people to alter or abolish and institute new governments. And that is when the government doesn't protect your natural rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So sometimes I ask people, what do you think those three things mean, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? And I find out that what people don't understand today is property rights. Property rights were a big thing then, right? If you stole somebody's, horse, that was a really big deal. People were allowed to you know, throughout the colonies, at least in New York, always have a weapon of some type on them because their property also included their person, wherever they were, or their carriage, or whatever. That property rights are part of your sacred rights, your right to your person as property and what you own as property, and for other people not to be able to take that from you. But now we have a government that just takes your property at will. So we've lost the whole concept of property rights. You know, people are so used to, you know, withholding tax. Well, that's taking your property. That's your pay. That's your property. Without your, well, I guess people would say with their permission, because they continually vote to keep this sustained. So I have, so I think Americans have really completely lost sight of what it means to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because they've been so corrupted by what they've been taught about the rights of government over you. I mean, I think most Americans think their rights come from the government now, which, you know, we know is not true. But I think most people think that, because I'll listen to people talk. I listen to people all the time, and they'll say, oh, well, but the government lets you do whatever. You know, the government says you can do that. And I'm listening. I'm saying, no, this is interesting. You know, you think the government allows you to do that? Yeah, the government, you know, there's no law against that. Like, well, but it must come from somewhere else, doesn't it? I mean, and people just, I don't know. This is why I don't know how we reach people, because people are so lost and confused. I just don't even know what the starting point of having a productive conversation. Although I did yesterday hear someone refer to Americans as confidently ignorant.
Great phrase. I love it. One of the things that really gets to me is when I talk to constitutionalists and they are so double-minded. Sometimes it's just absolutely incredible. I say, well, do you believe in slavery? No, the North was right to attack the South over slavery. I said, slavery was constitutional. And you get this deer in the headlights look. I said, either you support a government that supports slavery, or you don't. You can't say that there shouldn't, that slavery is wrong and the South deserved everything they got, when it was in the Constitution and the Supreme Court had said it was constitutional in 1856. So now you're telling me that you support the Constitution, but you hate the people who actually leaned on it.
And I'm sorry, folks. Lincoln said repeatedly that, you know, he had no mission to end slavery.
Oh, yes, exactly. And then I think this is classic. I don't think many people understand this. They look at the Emancipation Proclamation. The Emancipation Proclamation freed no one. That is all hyperbole. And yet we look at what Secretary of State at that time, what he had to say, and he said very, very simply, I think he was from New York. I'm trying to remember his name, Karen. Help me out.
Was it Seward?
Yeah, it was Seward. Thank you. Seward's icebox. Yeah, okay. It was Seward, and it was just amazing because Seward said, well, Mr. President, you have freed the slaves where you have no control, but yet you have kept the slaves in bondage where you do. Now, that's the American mindset today. Oh, those South, rip down that flag. That's a racist flag. But your Constitution was racist, people. Your Constitution told people they could own other people.
Right.
Here's a fine point on that, is that you have constitutionalists now, Yankee constitutionalists, supporting what happened to the South on the basis of slavery by a government who ruled on Dred Scott.
Yes.
A judiciary that ruled on Dred Scott, and then they claimed the North had a moral obligation to do what it did, which is absurd. But that's their reasoning. And the reason they can reason that way.
We got some more music. We'll be back on the flip side. Hang on to that thought, DW. We'll get back to you, buddy.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pauti Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
This 70s music, man, it's just absolutely beautiful. But folks, let's get back. We've got so much to get covered here, and we have Cal, and we have the wonderful lady from New York, Ms. Karen Quinones. And DW, you were speaking before we went to break.
Yeah, well, I just trying to put the point on that. This rationale and reasoning about the moral authority of the North invading the South based upon this narrative of slavery and emancipation comes from a government, this federal government of Abraham Lincoln's, well, the prior administration, a federal government that validated it by the federal judiciary in Dred Scott. So it seems to me like these aren't reasons. These are just excuses for why they want to believe what they want to believe. It's a double bind. From this point of view, the South can do no right and the North can do no wrong. And it's just a really good example of contorted and twisted reasoning and what I call doctrine, I just think it's just a really good example of that. And when we have this war of northern aggression, civil war, I think it's more of a revolutionary war myself. And we have this, and when the federal government can, at this point, Congress and everybody can have some substance in going forward. Well, they don't make these freed slave state citizens, do they? Of the states, they make them federal citizens, don't they?
I wonder how that happens. Yes, isn't that wonderful?
Just an accident, right?
Yeah, it was a coinky dink.
Yeah.
Cal, what is the Arizona weather got you out there, buddy? Speak up.
Oh, no, I mean, DW is pointing it out, and it's the double-mindedness. I can call exactly what DW is for Fresford. It's just, to me, it's just mental gymnastics, and I just cannot follow some of the mental gymnastics that the constitutional conservatives have to put themselves through. I can't do it.
Well,
my brain's not that flexible anymore.
Well, the first thing you have to make sure you are, if you're a constitutional conservative, the first thing you have to assure yourself is that you're a hypocrite.
That is the word.
Full disclosure, Mike, I used to be a constitutional conservative.
So was I.
The change is I learned history. I was no longer ignorant of history. And so to be a constitutional conservative, you have to be ignorant of true history, not the stuff that you learn from coach in high school. True history.
Yeah, but look at let's jump back to scripture again, please, just for this one, and that is Hosea 4:6. My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge, and they have rejected knowledge. So if you rejected knowledge, you're not ignorant, you're stupid. Karen?
That is the sad place we are. You know, DW, you were talking about the Dred Scott decision. You know, like to share with you guys an interesting story about the evolution of New York telling its own history. So for many years, when New York discussed the Civil War period, as we call it in New York, no one ever really talked about New York and the Dred Scott decision. They talked about the Dred Scott decision and how terrible it was, and, you know, it upheld slavery and people were, you know, like a suitcase or something. But what they never talked about was that New York fully supported and upheld the Dred Scott decision. So it was not safe for escaped slaves to come into New York City or the environs, because we supported the Dred Scott decision. We allowed bounty hunters to operate, and we allowed people to be arrested by bounty hunters and taken back. Now, about, I don't know, how many years has it been since we've been on this "we all have to be guilty about America" kick? The New York story changed so that I go out and I listen to the tour guides who talk about, you know, they do a number of slave tours, or they call them Underground Railroad tours. And now they talk about the Dred Scott decision and how bad it was and how we can never atone for the terrible way we supported the Dred Scott decision. So, you know, just a little bit of the way it's kind of a self-serving thing, the way people think about it. So when we didn't want to talk about it, we wanted the Dred Scott decision to be like this horrible, horrible thing. We would talk about it, but not that New York supported it. Now that it serves us to instill guilt in people, we talk about it.
Amazing. Great analogy. Great analogy there, Karen. Comments, guys?
Yeah. It's a great way to psychologically demoralize a segregated and collected group of people, namely white people.
Here comes the music. We'll be back on the other side, folks. Stay with us and support RBN.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names. Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in, and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit Extendivite. That's Extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
CCR, folks, does it ever get any better than that music we had back then? Probably some folks would argue with me, but man, I tell you what, that 70s and 80s music, there will never be a comparison, not in my mind. But that's not what we're talking about today. Although I do plan a program on Rebel Madman Radio. Of course, tomorrow, my guest is the beautiful and very knowledgeable Karen Quinones. You ever heard of her, Karen?
I think I know who you're talking about.
Well, she is going to be with me tomorrow to talk about the election of 1800. And I have always felt that the election of 1800 defined America. Am I wrong?
Everyone needs to know about the election of 1800.
Well, I hope that in our 3 hours tomorrow, Karen, we will be able to tell them about it.
Okay.
All right, I'm looking forward to it. But now back to constitutional conservatives. But I did want to say I plan on doing a Rebel Madman radio show on Southern music, and I have already obtained my co-host for that one, and it's none other than Mr. Jamie Bell. from Alabama. He's a just a fantastic keyboard man, and he has played with Alabama. He's played with quite a few of the groups that we all know, especially in the South. So we're going to do a program on Southern music. I don't think I've ever heard anyone else do that. But anyway, let's jump back to the Constitution. DW, where you want to take us?
Oh, well, I don't even know where I was at.
There you are. Yeah, you is.
Yeah, there's so many different directions we could go. Well, how about you have to on constitutional conservatives, it was mentioned earlier here in the chat here that isn't one of the primary prerogatives of this so-called federal government to protect its borders and the nation?
Article 4, Section 4.
So, yeah.
Yes.
Article 4, Section 4. Protect everyone from invasion.
Yeah. So, as far as I can tell, the last 40 years of my life, we've been under experiencing an invasion of vagrants. How is it that constitutional conservatives can still justify supporting the federal government and subsidizing it? I'm at a loss for that. Maybe somebody here can explain that to me.
Let's see what Mr. Cal's got to say. And when he gets ready parsing this one, I'm going to throw the biggest rock in my bucket at you guys. So go ahead, Cal.
Well, I think when they're talking about invasion, I can see it, DW's point about invasion. Part of it is I'm not so blaming of the immigrants that are coming here, and the government doesn't just allow it, it facilitates it. And in actuality, originally when the Constitution was written and ratified, the states were in control of who immigrated into the states. And I mean, that you can see that in the Alien and Sedition Act in Jefferson's and Madison's response to it in the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions, that it was the states that were supposed to be in charge of who could come into the country or who could come into the states, which are the country. And that got changed with a court ruling in 1898, Wyndham Locke or something like that. I can't remember the exact name. So they've made a whole mess of immigration. I mean, if the states were in control of immigration, Texas could just shut its own borders.
And Arizona and California and New Mexico.
Shut its own border. Yeah, they could just shut their own borders and say, no, you can't come here. But well, the federal government usurped the power, and it works both ways. I mean, when there was all those refugees from, what was it, Syria, back when Obama was president, and they brought all those immigrants over here, and they flew them over here against the state's wishes. Well, they could do that because, well, the state surrendered their sovereignty when they signed on to the Constitution. That's the original 13. Other than Texas, no other state has ever been sovereign.
Well, the thing that just absolutely freaks me out here, guys, and here comes my big rock, so get ready to catch it. Here is the thing. When we talk about constitutionalists, they say, oh, I support the Constitution 100%. I support original intent. I support all of this. Well, if you do, folks, you support Article 6, Paragraph 2, which is called the Supremacy Clause, which makes the federal government and its courts supreme over everyone, including the states. And then there's going to be those people. Man, these Federalist lawyers back then, they were brilliant. Don't think for a minute you were dealing with dummies here, because they put into the Supremacy Clause that if it's in pursuance of the Constitution, and today you see these 10th Amendment Center and all these other people jumping all over that word, it must be in pursuance of the Constitution. Well, I said it is in pursuance of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18. because all they have to do is say it's necessary and proper, and it's constitutional. So in essence, again, I don't mean to be redundant, but according to Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18, anything the federal government does is constitutional, people, and its courts will back it up. And that's why we're in this mess. But that supremacy clause, you can't support the Constitution and not support the supremacy clause. And my great example is what's happened this year. Back in March, the people in Missouri passed a legislation called the Second Amendment Preservation Act. And then, of course, almost immediately after it was passed, the Department of Justice said, okay, look, we're not going along with that, so we want to go to trial over it. We're going to say, no, you can't do that. We're taking it to the courts. So then the Department of Justice gets to pick their own judge because they are the Department of Justice. Now, how many of you people out there got a letter from the Department of Justice asking you what judge you wanted to appear over this case? Well, the judge that was picked was one Brian Wimes. I think I'm pronouncing his name right, W-I-M-E-S. And he was an Obama appointee. And he said, no, Missouri, you can't have the Second Amendment Preservation Act because it violates the Supremacy Clause. Well, everybody said, well, don't worry about that. Supreme Court will take care of it. Yeah, they did. Well, first it went to the appellate courts back in early October. And the appellate courts backed up Judge Wimes and said, yes, Supremacy Clause overrules states' rights. The Supremacy Clause overrules the Bill of Rights. Now, folks, that's not exactly what they said, but their ruling said so. Their ruling said that it overrules it. So then it goes to the Supreme Court at the very end of October. And the wonderful Trump appointee, Mr. Neil Gorsuch. I think his first name's Neil. I could be wrong. But Mr. Gorsuch writes the decision stating that Judge Wimes was in fact right, and therefore the Supreme Court will not hear the case. So the people of Missouri have no voice in the government. That proves it unequivocally. Karen, your thoughts, dear lady?
Well, you know, I know quite a few people who think of themselves as constitutional conservatives. And, you know, a couple of them I've got to abandon that. And one of them is a lawyer friend of mine. He was a chief counsel at Lehman Brothers. So he's a very smart guy, and you can really talk to him and get him to analyze things. And we were talking about all of this. We were texting back and forth about all of this earlier today. And one of the things we came to the conclusion is that a lot of people who consider themselves constitutional conservatives really believe that the government, that the people in the government have some sort of moral obligation that will restrain them from abusing their power. This is like a big thing I have with conservatives in general, is that they really believe there's some kind of morality ruling out there. You know, and they've lost every fight in my lifetime, you know, because they don't realize there's no morality. You just have to go out and fight for what it is you want. The other side understands that. But they really, they just have this strange belief in this higher morality that people will govern by if you elect the right people. And I honestly don't know where they get that from.
Well, Karen, I know you were listening first hour, but you weren't with us. But I brought back what my grandfather said to me back in the 60s when I was complaining about the federal government not following the rules. And my grandpa, in his wonderful mountain wisdom, that good old Appalachian Mountain Scottish-Irish wisdom, he said, boy, if they won't follow the Ten Commandments, what makes you think they'll follow words written on paper?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's another, you know, just conundrum I have with the conservatives in general, is that a lot of them still believe in this, that people will, you know, take on a role or get elected and govern with some sort of morality, which mm-hmm. just isn't true. And I can't believe they don't see it yet. You know, that like they really, like for as long as I can remember, they really believed in elections. like, oh, we just will elect this guy or this woman, and because she believes in these things, they'll do the right thing. And of course, they never do. They do what's best to keep them in office, because that's how it all works, right? Once you're part of the aristocracy, you don't want to leave the aristocracy. Nobody wants to leave once they're a part of it. I mean, you know, you get to become part of the aristocracy. You get to meet anybody you want to meet. If you like music, you can go see any musician you want to see. You can go backstage. You can have dinner with them. You can get into any restaurant you want to go to. Whatever your vice or your desire is, once you're in the aristocracy, someone will provide it for you. And, you know, who wants to give that up once they have that? Virtually nobody. No one, right? So I don't know why they think that someone, you're going to send someone to Washington, D.C., like the pit of evil and corruption, and think they're going to behave with some sort of morality on behalf of the people. I just don't think it can happen. I'll tell you guys a quick story about my father. My father once told me, he was telling me someone I knew in the town I grew up in was running for office. And I said, well, Dad, are you going to vote for him? And he said, absolutely not. And I'm going to tell you the same thing I told him. I don't want to be responsible for you turning into a crook.
Well, you know, I think one of the things I'll never forget, Karen, and it fits right in with that, and that is a great story. But I remember I was trying to think of his name. He was a gold dealer in California, but he was very close friends with Ron Paul. And Ron Paul told this story. He said, when I decided that I wanted to run for president, I think the first time he ran for president, he ran as a libertarian. I'm not sure. But he said, when I decided I wanted to run for president, I contacted my friend in California, the gold dealer, and I said, can I count on your support? And he said, I got back a very simple answer. No, Paul, I couldn't do that. I know, Ron, I couldn't do that to a friend.
Right.
DW, your thoughts, buddy. I don't want you falling asleep there in Alabama.
Oh, no. I this is a very interesting conversation for me. Well, I appreciate what Karen's saying about this this morality play, that program that circulates in their brain, another part of this reasoning that goes on, the mythological reasoning based upon morality. Look, it's kind of a big deal. It's part of the PSYOP, and the PSYOP of cult of personality in making these founders a cult of personality, that they had a higher standard of morality, that they were exceptional, that they had qualities vested in them that were to be aspired to. And if you just elect the right people in times of need, this is the most important election that we'll ever have.
And that's why
that mythology, and combined with romanticism and nostalgia, it's a disease, and it affects their it's a coping skill, Karen, it's what it is. It's actually a coping skill that is part of the PSYOP of cult of personality. Yeah, go ahead.
I agree. It's part of a fantasy that we have about the past. That's why we're going to talk about the election of 1800 tomorrow, so that people can see already by 1800 how dirty, underhanded, backstabbing, and filthy the behavior was. That this idea we learn in America of this glorious past where everybody was a statesman and everybody was moral and everyone was doing for what was best in the country. This is all a lie we've been told. This is a total lie. You know, like I'm looking at this thing that Hamilton wrote about Adams, and he talks about Adams having a vanity without bounds and a jealousy capable of discovering every object. That he's a man of imagination and eccentricity. It's horrible. I mean, this is 1800. You can't get much earlier than that.
Well, I'm trying to find it now. Go ahead, Daryl. I'm trying to find it right now. We need to get Cal in here too. But what I'm trying to find now, let me finish you one second here. What I'm trying to find right now is what John Adams' wife said about Hamilton. Let me see if I can locate that. Go ahead, DW.
Oh.
Well, when Karen was describing what Hamilton wrote about Adams, it reminded me of something my grandpa used to say to me, or other people. And this is back when I was like 10 years old. He would say, yep. He'd say, boy, just remember, a skunk smells his own ass first. And, you know. I think Hamilton was complaining about what he was.
Well, when we talk about this tomorrow, you'll see that a lot of the stuff Hamilton accuses others of is what he himself is doing.
Okay.
And that's a technique, right? You accuse the rival of doing what you're doing so that people will look at your rival first, because generally people believe the first accuser. You know, whoever comes out first and makes the accusation, that's who people are inclined to believe. So if you accuse the other person of doing what you're doing, people are going to look at them first. And then when the other person says, no, it's not me, it's him or it's her, they're less likely to believe that second person. So I think, you know, Hamilton is employing a little bit of this tactic himself. I mean, he definitely does it with Burr and accuses Burr of all kinds of awful stuff he himself is doing. And a couple people in the newspapers came out and said that very thing about Hamilton. You know, they say, well, you know, so-and-so, you know, is accusing so-and-so of A, B, C, and D, but he just did A, B, C, and D. So, you know, this is a well-used tactic to, you know, accuse your opponent first of what you're doing.
Oh, let me read this, Karen, and we're.
This is a great insult. You guys are going to love it.
Oh, this will come in great tomorrow. Or do you already have this, Karen?
I have it somewhere. I don't remember it verbatim, so you do it.
Okay. Beware of that spare Cassius. Has always occurred to me when I have seen that cock sparrow. Oh, I have read his heart and his wicked eyes many a time. The very devil is in them. They are lasciviousness itself, for I have no skill in physiognomy. Pray burn this letter, John. Dead men tell no tales. It is really too bad to survive the flames. I shall not dare to write so freely to you again unless you assure that you have complied with my request.
Oh, yeah.
she kind of nailed him to the wall, and nobody nailed John Adams to the wall better than did Mercy Otis Warren.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, incredible woman.
Oh, yes. Cal, you awake out there, buddy?
Yeah, I'm still awake out here. It's you mentioned the corruption, you know. And like I say, some of the constitutional conservatives somehow think that magically there was this little short era where everybody was just really nice and the politicians weren't crooked politicians and the aristocracy was interested in the common man. And then, you know, go back to 1765 when Patrick Henry had to basically, to get his motions through, had to threaten, what was the Speaker of the House of Burgess, John Robinson? Was that his name? Is Robinson?
Yes. Yes.
And he had to threaten exposing all of his corruption in loaning money out to his
clients. Oh, he exposed
But, you know, in order to, you know, well, let's not push this any farther. Okay, we're going to agree to your resolve for right now. So the corruption existed prior to the revolution.
Of course it did. This is all magical thinking.
Yeah. These are the same people that, you know, some of them are the same people that wrote the Constitution. They were corrupt before the revolution, people. What makes you think they're all of a sudden did an about face?
Well, Cal, how many people out there who are call themselves conservative constitutionalists can tell us anything about Robert Morris?
Probably none, because when you know about Robert Morris, that's part of knowing history, and when you start to understand all that, you quit being a constitutional conservative. Like I say, you know, learn history and you won't be one anymore.
Well, if they work on Wall Street, they'll know about Robert Morris, and they'll find a way to justify it, and, you know, they'll make it fit.
Well, there's only one book that I've been able to find about Robert Morris, and it's nothing but praises. And nowhere in the book do they elucidate the fact that he stole $17 million from the American government.
course not.
But he's at the Constitutional Convention. He's one of the first senators. Ooh.
Bank of New York.
And then they put in that wonderful provision, Article 3, Clause 1, which ensured that Robert Morris would never be prosecuted for his crimes. You think they did that by accident, folks? I mean, Robert Morris was there, but Robert Morris never opened his mouth at the convention. Does anybody find that unusual?
What state was Robert Morris there from? Pennsylvania?
Yeah, Philadelphia.
Pennsylvania, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and he was one of the first senators from Pennsylvania, and he wrote to Francis Hopkinson, a member of Congress, when Congress was debating the amendments, and he said, "If that dratted Madison, he is scared to death of the spirit of Patrick Henry, and if they pass the right amendment, I will hang." What does that tell you?
Ooh.
And well, most people are totally unaware of that.
When you say, you know, where was Robert Morris from, and you kind of said Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in reality, Pennsylvania wasn't at the convention. Philadelphia was. Philadelphia was represented at the convention.
New York, too. Only New York City was there, and that's why when they had their parade in favor of the Constitution upstate, they filled a cannon with rocks and were going to shoot the Constitutional parade when it went by.
That almost sounds as bad as Pennsylvania, out in the western part of Pennsylvania when they first started to get the Constitution ratified, when they first did that, they had to, the activities in Pennsylvania, I can't go into them now, we don't have the time, but folks, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy Friday evening to join us. And I hope that you will join us tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, as I am joined by Ms. Quinones, and we are going to jump up and down on the election of 1800.
Please join us. Everyone should understand that election. You'll understand so much once you know what happened that year.
Oh, big time. And D.W. and Cal, you guys are just special. You know, I don't care what your wife says about you, either one of you. I think you're okay.
I'd be short.
my parting shot here is just remember, life is a mystery if you don't know history.
Oh, I love it.
That's a great line.
I can't wait for my T-shirt. Thanks, folks. Support RBN, and we shall see you tomorrow. Thanks, Karen.
Thanks, DW.
Thanks, Cal. Appreciate it. You guys have a wonderful evening. Thanks, Mr. Producer.
Hey, guys.
There, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off Drop-In Lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off Drop-In Lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.